Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our Bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismalyn of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Sansa 5 of Clash of Kings. And in our Raven, we will be talking about Sir Shadrick the Mad Mouse.
Wow. Is that a tiny character? Is that a minor?
Minor character.
I mean, the smallest of the small?
Yeah, and actually we'll get into it. Like that is a part of this theory, and that it's something I kind of found. I've been reading ahead and keep coming across Sir Shadrick, and I think he's interesting. So I thought, okay, let's, you know, looking for some more theories, we'll check it out a little bit, you know, and see. His stature has something to do with the theory, and also the fact that he likens himself to a white mouse with red eyes. So stick around.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll get into that here in a bit. As we do have, so let's see here. So just a little bit of news at the beginning of the podcast. So just remember, this Thursday, for those of you who are our Bannermen and higher tier on Patreon, we're going to be doing a Zoom hangout. So little happy hour sort of event before Ez and I both go on vacation.
Yeah.
Which is going to be interesting. Yeah.
Life changing.
I'm going to where Ez normally is on vacation. He's going somewhere else, so there will be no sort of
Matt's recording. Literally coming back home. He's actually coming here where I'm at, and I'm going out of the country,
you know. Right, so well, yeah, so works out. Hey, you know, so yeah, so stay tuned for that. And then I did tell you guys about the iTunes thing. For those of you guys, so that does go live on the 15th. That's not to say that we will have, you know, our entire Patreon backlog up on iTunes then, but just keep an eye out for that. So that is coming. It looks like Apple is rolling it out on Tuesday. So just keep an eye out for that, and then there'll be more of that sort of up there. But you will be able to get access to the sort of some of the Patreon stuff, Patreon episodes on Apple. If you don't want to go to Patreon and do that, you will be able to get some of that on Apple Podcasts, which is going to be cool. It's going to be super cool. I'm really excited for it because it makes it a lot easier for people because it's all right there. And theoretically, it'll all be in the same feed. We don't really know. Apple really hasn't said an entire lot about it other than it's happening. So I think it's going to be one of those things we'll have to sort of wait and see when they launch it, and then we'll go from there, really.
Yeah. So that's great. Good update there. We have another update. I just like to kind of sometimes you just go and you just type in Google and you say Game of Thrones news. Mm-hmm. What do you got, right? Literally the top three headlines are this. You've got Fox News and People
coming out and saying that Emilia Clarke is teasing another possible culprit behind the infamous Game of Thrones coffee cup, right? That was in the final. That is a caught Starbucks. That's the news, Matt. That is the news, okay? Guess who it is, by the way? Guess who she's blaming? Dan Weiss.
Jon Snow. Kit.
The showrunner. Okay. The showrunner.
I can see it.
She's blaming the showrunners for more, you know, mess up. So that's actually fitting in it. She's probably telling the truth there. Another one. This is, again, the top three headlines that I saw when I typed in Game of Thrones. They made me laugh. Top three Game of Thrones headlines here. Inside Hook. The title to this article is George R.R. Martin proves once again he doesn't care about finishing the Game of Thrones novels. That's literally the opening thing. What did he do? I have no idea. That was one day ago. I'm not even clicking on it because it just seems like clickbait, or should I? I mean, it just seems ridiculous.
So right now is the E3, the video game conference.
Yeah.
And there's a game coming out. We talked about this a while back, called Elden Ring, which is supposed to be coming, and it looks super cool, dark fantasy. It's from the same people who make the Dark Souls games, which are like just brutally difficult game. I mean, that's like sort of their whole deal, is that they're just ridiculously difficult. But yeah, you know, it's fantasy. And so George R. R. Martin is writing, or at least assisting on the story.
Got it. That's it. What it
so
is.
So now it looks like this. Yeah. So yeah, so we finally just saw the trailer for that. It looks super cool. I mean, I won't be playing it because I tried playing a Dark Souls game once and I made it through like the first level and that was it. And because they're really hard, like that's like their whole deal, is that they're really, really, really difficult.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. People are just saying one more thing, one more project that's tying him up.
That's not Game of Thrones, but it's done. I mean, he's done now on it, obviously. So
yeah. I'm just. Hey, it's the article. I'm just, you know, I thought it was funny.
So. Right now, yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it for Game of Thrones news. We'll keep you guys updated as we get more. Guarantee it all. The major news will drop when we're on vacation. Guaranteed. Guaranteed that's going to happen.
100%.
So, something will happen like that. But
what if there's like a teaser, like a House of the Dragon teaser?
Geez, I will be down in you know what country on my little phone trying to record something and sending it to you.
Do they even have internet there?
No. I mean, hopefully. I don't know.
What if you literally get lost in the Bermuda Triangle?
Ah, dude, I've tried not to think about that. I've thought about sharks and alligators and all sorts of stuff. And I'm
almost... Do not go in the water.
I'm not.
I don't think they have alligators there. I'm pretty sure they don't have alligators there.
They don't. Okay. There's a rainforest. Technically, there's a rainforest. So there's something in that rainforest. Like, there's got to be some really big animals.
Let me look. I'm pretty sure we can tell everyone what country it is. Unless you want to keep it.
I'm keeping it safe. Unless you want to keep it a secret. You got to go. Here's what you have to do. You have to go check my social media. I will update the stories over there on Instagram.
Well, I always forgot. I kind of thought it was an island. It's not an island that you're going to.
Oh, no.
It's not.
No.
I always forget that it's not an island.
And there's a freaking rainforest. And you can walk through the canopy, okay?
Dude, there's like poisonous frogs.
Oh, I know, man. I was thinking, if one of those frogs just leapt over and like landed on my skin, dead. You know? Gone. Goner. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go.
Well, I mean, you also got to worry about go. What you really got to worry about is cartels.
I don't even get me started. I know. I'm not... I'm going out of necessity. I want everyone to know that I'm going because I need to go. This is an essential trip. All right. This is not a pleasure trip. Everyone's wondering, like, why is this even going on this vacation if he doesn't want all these poisonous
What is this for? Like, what is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was somebody like kidnapped and this is like a taken situation?
It's a secret. Hedge Knight has been summoned. All right. I'm a sworn sword now. So I got to go, you know, I got to go fight off some. I got to fight. I have to, you know, go see too.
There's probably panthers.
There are. I was looking at the, when you walk through, they have these like rope bridges. And as you walk through the canopy, there's literally just like a massive cat watching you.
It looks to me like you're not flying through the Bermuda Triangle.
Thank God. I'm actually going out of Texas. So I'm going from Ohio to Texas
Dallas. Houston. Or I think it's like Houston, actually. And then maybe it's Dallas. I'm not sure. And then from there onward. So
Jaguars.
Yeah, guys, you know what? I guess, yes, send us a Raven. What country do you think I'm going to? I don't think I've spoiled it anywhere.
It says Crocodiles, so maybe.
That's what I'm saying, man. By the way, the place that here's one hint. I'll give you guys a hint. And I'll tell Matt, this is the God's honest truth. This place that I'm going to is the largest. I'm sorry, it's the most dense area. It does have a beach, so off of the beach, most dense area where in which you will find great white sharks. Like this is where they breed. This is the largest breeding ground or whatever area. Is right there, off the coast on one of their islands.
Wow!
And they.
Here, I'll give people a cryptic. I'll give people a cryptic. Yeah, you know, send it. Well, if I say that, then people will know it's because it's too close. It's not the same country that coincides with the famous Van Halen song, but it's around there. So I can say that, and I think people will.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. There you go. So yeah, go check our social medias. Okay, Super Gains Bros for Matt and @Womprat_2M. We'll keep you updated on the vacation stuff. And if something happens, I mean, we might have to call the banners and have somebody else send us a reaction. And we'll post it on our YouTube channel if the trailer drops. Okay,
it'll just be me solo on the podcast. I'll just be doing it all by myself.
God, the whole time. Dang it.
It'll be a train wreck if that happens.
God dang it. Well, are you talking about me if I don't come back? Like if I get ate by a croc? Jeezy cow.
Right, then I'll have to do the podcast myself.
Yeah. Maybe I'll write a secret letter as to who my heir/replacement should be. Could you imagine? I kinda like what they did for Rob Stark. Just kidding, guys. It's Matt. You guys
do
that.
Oh, we can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Let's move over to our reread today. Guys, today might be a short episode because it's a short chapter, but we're sort of heading into like the tail end of this whole deal. And so this is sort of this is really the calm before the storm, to say the least. And that storm is Stannis Baratheon getting ready to come, you know, get it? See what I did there?
Oh yeah.
Cause he's from Storm's End.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cause he's a storm.
The storm.
The storm. Yeah.
But it will be ended.
Right. Cause he's from Storm's End and it's the storm, the calm before the storm.
I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
So, anywho, the Battle of the Blackwater is coming. Okay. Sansa is in the Red Keep's Royal Sept. The Battle of the Blackwater is underway, and the people in the Sept are waiting for the outcome. Joffrey obliged her to see him off before. He made her kiss a sword, promising that he would kill Stannis with it. Sansa hopes that Joffrey will fight himself, himself in the battle and get himself killed. She told him that her brother Rob was always in the thick of the fight. Joffrey replied that he will kill Rob as well. In the Sept, the people are singing. Sansa sings with them until they start praying for the victory of Joffrey. Silently, Sansa prays for his defeat and goes away. As she leaves for Maegor's Holdfast, she can hear the sound of the battle. Within the Holdfast, Sansa enters the Queen's ballroom, where there is almost every highborn woman in the city, along with a handful of old men and young boys. Sansa notices Illyn Payne. When Sansa asks why Illyn is present, Cersei states he would deal with the treasonous guards and defend Cersei and Sansa if King's Landing is sacked. See, you know, look at it. Sometimes the chapter summaries over there, you start reading them and you're like, this doesn't add up. Because the Battle of the Blackwater isn't, it's becoming underway. It's not like it's by saying it's underway. It makes it appear as if, you know, everything's already happening.
Oh yeah. No, guys,
we read these summaries over at the Song of Ice Fire Wiki. So sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of a quick refresher on what the chapter was about and some highlights for us to go, you know, click on different things. Like you want to look into the Sept, if you want to look into Maegor's Holdfast, Illyn Payne, all those different things. So many characters, so many different places, and it's nice to have a little refresher. But yeah, this is the point where Sansa is, she's comforting. She has to, you know, she's got to comfort some of the other ladies in here while the battle is raging. And Cersei is realizing that she's making preparations for a lot of different outcomes, right? So it could be that we are completely taken, that King's Landing is sacked, and we may be held hostages or what have you. I think she would rather, she's preparing. She has Illyn Payne there in case they, maybe there's orders, right, for them to be killed or poisons to be drank. The show kind of did something like that. Yeah, because she doesn't want to be taken captive and used in some way. But also, Sansa is just there to kind of comfort and sing her songs. She's been taught by her septa for a long time, all these different songs, and she enjoys good singing. So here she is kind of comforting folks.
Yeah, the song, by the way, for anybody who listens to the audiobook, you could hear Roy Dotrice singing the song, and he's singing it to the tune of Deck the Halls. And I'm just like, of all of the songs, you know. But I guess, you know, if you're doing the audiobook, you'd have to come up with something to sort of, you know, think about how you do it. It's like when I go back and I listen to, or it's like if you go watch an older version or you listen to an audiobook of The Hobbit, and they're singing Misty Mountain, you know, like cold, but now we're so used to the movie version that will be the version pretty much forever. But they didn't have something, so they just made something up, and it's like, seems so different, you know, like so
yeah different. Oh, anytime you hear the audiobook guy do some singing for Lord of the Rings or anything, it's hilarious, because that definitely would not be the tune in any show or movie, but they've got to do something. Yeah, okay, so also, too, this is a chapter where Cersei, like a lot of the Kingsguard come in and out and are like kind of giving her reports on things and letting her know what's happening. And she is, you know, giving them orders, telling people what to do, all that. That's going to be happening around this time. Like, she'll get updates and reports from the war. Yeah, we know where it goes. Ultimately, we know that it's everything's going to be okay for this group of people. But it's just more where you see the people that are close to Cersei. You see what she's doing, what she's planning, keeping Sansa close, and then communicating with the Kingsguard. Doesn't want her son to go too far to be in harm's way. Make sure he's close by.
Yeah. So I do have a couple. I do have a couple interesting things here from this chapter. Because guys, this chapter again, it's another one of these chapters where, I mean, it's really short, but here we go. So starting off, you have in the Sept they sang for the mother's mercy, but on the walls it's the warrior they pray to, and all in silence. She remembered how Septa Mordain used to tell them that the warrior and the mother were only two faces of the same great god, but if there is only one, whose prayers will be heard? So that's kind of interesting, because, you know, really the seven, we don't sort of, I think we spend so much time focusing on R'hllor and the great other that's sometimes the seven, you know, we don't either, it's just something that's not talked about as much, but that is interesting that the seven is actually one god but with many different aspects to it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when are the seven going to start answering prayers is what I want to know, right? I mean, seems like we pray to them. We're always thought they're the silent. As you said, they're the silent gods. They're not, you know, we might sing to them. We might pray to them silently, and they're going to be silent themselves. But yeah, it is interesting that they are. Jaime, I was just reading a Jaime chapter the other day where he talks about the warrior and how that was the manifestation of that god, right, that he kind of gravitates towards because he's a warrior. And yeah, I think it's like this, there's this one god, but it shows itself in many forms, being the mother, the father, the stranger, and so on. And who do you pray to during which time? That is interesting, that during certain times you might pray to certain individuals. You know, the warrior is going to try to keep you safe. The father's going to look over everyone, the mother's mercy, and you know, just that kind of comforting, kind vibe that you would want in this room where Sansa is trying to sing and comfort folks. Yeah, that would be who you would turn to and pray to.
Yeah, Okay, so after that, right, Tyrion is here for a second, and he does sort of talk to Sansa a little bit, right? And yeah, that's kind of interesting, just because we know ultimately that Tyrion and Sansa are gonna get married, or gonna be, well, they are, they do get married, mm-hmm. you know, not really too long, sort of. I mean, in the next book, of course, but. Sometimes when I go back and I look at Tyrion and Sansa's interactions, and kind of think about, like, you know, where could this lead to? What's going to go on even further down the line? I was actually rewatching a little bit of season 8. Here we go. Mm-hmm. And in the Battle of Winterfell, you know, it's Sansa and Tyrion, and they're like together when they're in the crypts.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, then they end up running and escaping, but. I was like, yeah, you know, I wonder if they will end up sort of getting tied back up together.
Yeah, what do you mean?
In some way or another. So it's in season eight, Sansa and Tyrion, they're in like the crypts together at Winterfell.
Yeah.
And like there's a moment where they like hold each other's hand or whatever. Yeah. And so I don't know. I was just kind of thinking,
could that happen?
Will they?
Something like that.
Because technically they're still married. Because their marriage is never, in the show at least, and even in the books, I mean, technically they're still married. Their marriage is never annulled or anything. I mean, they're
right.
Still
never
technically
consummated.
Married.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So there's some gray area.
I don't know if that means anything in A Song of Ice and Fire world, does it? I think once you're married, you're married.
I it was very important to have a bedding ceremony, you know, to make sure that you. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, but I mean, in our world, it doesn't matter if you do that or not. It's all about that paper. Once you sign that legal document, you're
right. But I think the whole point is the context is she's forced into a marriage, and also it wasn't consummated. So yeah, you get into the whole: is she technically married? Was she forced into it? You know, with all the politics and the gaming, Winterfell's gonna be like, heck no, she was a prisoner. Who was forced into marriage and stuff. So, against her will. So, anyways, that is something.
Right.
But, yeah, I still think, though, Tyrion treated her well. And I think she probably could show up and be, you know, they might have a moment. She thinks about Tyrion all the time when she thinks, she thinks about Tyrion all the time in his kindness. And when she's looking at, when she goes to the Vale and she thinks about Baelish and Baelish kisses her and things like that. She has she just remembers how Tyrion didn't, you know, necessarily, like, how he showed kindness to her. And she reflects on that. So it wouldn't be, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Tyrion is sees her later and they have a moment where they are kind. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So wouldn't that technically make Tyrion king? Wouldn't that technically make Tyrion king in the North?
If they're still married,
yeah,
yeah, that's the whole point. That's what he wants. Is he has a claim to Winterfell? Yeah,
yeah. I know.
Yeah, yeah, he's king.
Well,
of the
I'm
North.
Just saying, Sansa becomes queen in the North, and yeah, he's king. We should start calling him that. That's what he is. You know, there is also the theory that Sansa is going to marry a Targaryen.
Yeah,
and there is a big theory that Tyrion is a Targaryen.
Good God, there's theories out there that. Have you? I didn't even really know much about this one, but the
I mean, whole, I'm just stating, you know,
facts. You're stating facts that right. They are technically still married.
Yes, this is a short chapter, man. We gotta, you know, we gotta yeah. Fluff it out today, okay?
Yeah, like, yeah, no.
We gotta go down some rabbit holes.
You're saying that they are gonna continue to be married. So let's actually think about that for a second, though, because that is an issue, right? And she is in the Vale. And she's with Baelish. Her aunt's tossed out the moon door. And they have... Actually, the Shadrick theory today is all about Sansa. So I'll get to that in a second. But it's all about monitoring and keeping track of Sansa for some greater purpose. It's kind of a very tinfoil thing. But there's not much on Sir Shadrick. So what do you do if you're Baelish? How do you get over the whole Tyrion's in exile right now? I mean, you would have to get like the High Septon to come up and maybe do an annulment of some kind. So they might actually do that. Maybe once everything is sort of revealed and all of the plotting and the scheming that's going on in the Vale comes to sort of a larger light, that might be the case. Because they were thinking at some point, Sweet Robin might be someone who she could marry. Harry the heir in the Vale was someone else. So you're right. People are putting forward all these different individuals, but there's a problem. She's still tied technically to House Lannister, right?
Right.
So yeah. Unless he's dead, unless people just think he's dead.
Are we going to get that resolved at any point?
Yeah, I don't. That's a great question, because as the show went, the way the show goes about this
is it going a totally different. The show just tosses that out the window, because then she marries Ramsay. Well, I mean, there she's literally really forced into.
Yes.
I mean, that's not even that's. Yeah.
But, yeah. And that was, they had to do again. That's Tyrion's on the outs, and you have to get a decree from King Tommen that basically.
Right.
Says that's
but
okay.
In the books, that's not even the case, because it's Sansa doesn't marry Ramsay Bolton. Elaine does. Or
right.
Jane Poole. Yeah. Yeah. Arya yeah. does.
Arya does, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fake
Arya. Yeah. Actually, marriages and alliances are something interesting to kind of watch and think about. As like, towards the end in our next book, Cersei's name will come up as someone else who could possibly be married. You have Lollies in this, Lady Tanda, and Lollies and different individuals who Bronn will kind of be, you know, he's going to get some lands and some titles and stuff like that. So it does sort of matter. That was the whole play, and that we want Tyrion to be Lord of Winterfell. I mean, have a claim to that, and it's such a long shot that's why Tyrion fits in Tywin's eyes. Yeah, let's go with Tyrion, because it's such a long shot, never gonna happen, but you know, I don't want to put anybody else in jeopardy. Like, he wouldn't send Jaime up there. The Northmen are gonna, you're too far away from Casterly Rock. You have to make them, I don't know, like that. You risk doing kind of what an Edmure Tully does with the phrase. You go to a wedding and you go up there to kind of, you know, be wed, do the bedding ceremony, and you're captured. You know what I mean? If Tywin sends up somebody else with Sansa to kind of solidify the North, well, there goes his son. But it's Tyrion, so we'll let that go. But. Right. And also, well, you couldn't do Jaime because his Kingsguard is, but.
Right. But his plan, Tywin. Well, that's his plan. Seems like it's going to work, because obviously Rob dies, and that Rob dies before the Purple Wedding. Mm-hmm. So at that point, hey, we could go take this. I mean, we could go take this over.
Yeah. 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 For sure. I mean, a lot of Tywin's plans too. It's just like he does lay all these different ideas out, and then once he's killed. Cersei, you can see sort of the, I'm not going to say madness, but what Tyrion does in this book, in A Clash of Kings, where he's kind of highlighting the mistakes that Cersei is making in regards to her children and planning and people around her at court. Tyrion shows us that he was sent there by his father to kind of work against her in that way, or keep her in line, sort of. Now, once Tywin dies, this is later on, I'm flashing forward to like basically A Feast for Crows. She all of a sudden will start to make all sorts of she undoes all this Tywin stuff. I mean, a lot of this stuff gets undone. But you're right. He had a really good plan sort of set up for his children and for the Lannister influence to be far reaching, very far. He was like super close to actually having a lot of power and influence and complete control over the realm. And things might have been prosperous, might have been good. You know, during the days of the Mad King, he was the guy running everything. So. But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. No. It's good. It's good. It's good to dive down this. Okay. So a little bit more about this. So one of the other things we kind of see quite a bit here actually is just in some of the quotes I'm seeing here online, people pointing out a lot about some of the things that. Sansa sort of prays for, right, and how she ill wishes a lot on Joffrey, right, sort of you know, that he'll go so like let me hear, what do you pray for, Sansa? I pray for Rob's victory, and Joffrey's death. So another line, right? Your Northerners won a crushing victory today. We received word only this morning. And then she, and these are all inner dialogue here. You know, Rob will kill you all, she thought, exulting. Mm-hmm. Moving over to the sword, right, that Joffrey makes her kiss. He'd owned a sword named Lion Tooth once, Sansa remembered. Arya had taken it from him and thrown it in a river. I hope Stannis does the same with this one. You know, and then she says, you know, it's a beautiful sword. She's lying to him, obviously. You know, the damn thing's as tall as I am, Tyrion muttered in a low voice. Half the chalice and Joff will be falling down drunk. Good, she thought. Perhaps he'll break his neck. The gods are cruel to take him so young and handsome at his own wedding feast, Lady Tanda had said to her. The gods are just, thought Sansa. Rob had died at a wedding. Oh, that's later. Sorry. But that's just some of these things that Sansa has throughout. And we do see some of that here too. So I think what this person's pointing out is ultimately, like, you know, I think we view Arya, because Arya goes to sleep at night with her list, right, later, mm-hmm. and she's like thinking about all the different people she wants to kill and stuff like that. And I think we view Sansa a little bit more as sort of innocent and a little more pure and stuff like that. But she does have she does have these thoughts as well, which is great, because it gives her character some sort of, you know, some dynamics to her character as well.
It does, because she is completely she's been tormented this whole time. She's had to watch her father lose his head. She's been manipulated, pulled one way, back the other way. Joffrey has been abusive and he's been terrible to her. Tyrion has tried to help when and where he can. And Cersei one day could be, you know, kind and talk about her beauty and ask her how she's doing, make her a gown, but she's got everybody spying on her. So yes, Sansa does not want anything. And then they're rubbing in her face that her brother's been, you know, like that he's going to be killed and that they're going to have his head and all this kind of stuff is going on.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So she is, yeah, and really just being tormented, essentially, here at King's Landing. So, yeah, she's praying for their downfall. And, yeah, it's not good. Another thing I wanted to point out, I guess, in this chapter, Sansa has always had she does not like Sir Ilyn Payne. He's always kind of scared her. So it is interesting, right, that he's the guy, he's the executioner who's in the room here. And when she looks at him, she's really, you know, shocked, and she kind of blurts out, why is Sir Ilyn Payne here? And the queen glanced at the mute headsman. To deal with treason and to defend us if need be. He was a knight before he was a headsman. She pointed her spoon towards the end of the hall where the tall wooden doors had been closed and barred. When the axes smashed down those doors, you may be glad to have him. Also, he's there for another reason, which is not just to deal with people showing up and you'll possibly, not to just to defend them from an enemy, but also to maybe even defend them from their own guards. Like, Cersei makes this jab at Osfred Kettleblack and says, like, you know, who will protect us from my guards? Loyal sellswords are as rare as virgin whores. If the battle is lost, my guards will trip on those crimson cloaks in their haste to rip them off. They'll steal what they can and flee, along with the serving men, washerwomen, stable boys, and all out to save their own worthless hides. So she asks Sansa at that point, do you know any good sacking songs? Or do you know what happens during the sacking of a city? Have you ever learned any of that in any of your songs? It's to highlight again the innocence of Sansa and her growing up and learning that, yeah, not everything is in my songs. It's what she wants, and it's what she wants to work towards. She wants things to be like those songs, but she's learning that, nope, they don't sing songs about that necessarily. And the rape and the pillaging and all the things that take place in a sacking of a city. So
Yeah. Another thing to point out in this chapter is sort of Sansa's sort of relationship with the Hound, right, in this one. Where she prays for the Hound, right? You know, and she wishes the Hound were here instead of Sir Ilan. Says, "He is no true knight, but he saved me all the same," she told the mother. "Save him if you can, and gentle the rage inside of him." And then, of course, later, she says, "You know, why is Sir Ilan here? I would be gladder if it were the Hound," Sansa thought. Harsh as she was, she did not believe Sandor Clegane would let any harm come to her. And then, of course, he will save her here shortly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's actually pretty cool. Yeah, he's someone who could mess up quite a few people. And they're just getting the battle reports, and you get a lot of the Kettle Blacks and different folk running in and out. Kind of, you see who really, almost in this chapter, you kind of see who Cersei can trust and who she prefers, her preferences a little bit, just in who's telling her information, keeping Sir Ilan there, and all that stuff. So, it's just more insight to her, and then Sansa character development. I don't know I've not read any one liner in here where there's something that really knocks my socks off and says
it's a really short chapter. It's like 10 pages at most, I think, maybe.
Yeah. So anyways, that's it, guys. We're basically singing away there. We're trying to comfort everybody. Lollies is nervous. You've got Lord Giles Rosby is in there coughing away as he always does, hacking up a lung and trying to wait out the battle. They can hear it. They can hear the battle just outside, and they're getting the reports.
Okay. All right. Well, that's kind of it. It is a short chapter. So, Ez, let's move on over to our sort of Raven today.
Yeah. So, if you haven't been able to tell, I've been kind of reading ahead in the series, and I like to go through and just, you know, try to see if I can find any other theories or little nuggets that make me just think about things like the Kettle Black, the Smiling Knight situation or what have you. And I was thinking about Sir Shadrick. So I went to Reddit just to see if I could find something. So credit here. This was posted by Moondoggle 5 years ago.
Okay.
And it is kind of tinfoil, but I figure we'll see what people... Sometimes these things, like, I read these to generate new ideas or to say, where did they go wrong or where did this go off the rails? And is there something more to this that I could add? Or it caused me to think about other theories or even disconnections to Sir Shadrick. That's hard to say. And, you know, make you kind of elaborate more on a person's theory. So I'll see what you guys think about this. You can let us know. Send us a Raven on this or leave us a comment about this. But so I had a thought, this is according to Moondoggle, that the other day about Sir Shadrick and my tinfoil theory. I've been going back and forth on a bunch of theories, and I think I may have come up with something new. I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out his identity, which I'll do a bit here as well. I've always had trouble determining his motives, but here I think I have a new twist on what's driving him. So, point number one, more like Shad Fib. So instead of Shadrick, it's Shad Fib. Everything Shadrick tells us about himself is a lie. A reoccurring theme here is going to be applying things we learn from Dunk about the life of a hedge knight to things Shadrick tells us. So this user is making the correlation between the hedge knight book and what Dunk tells us about the life of a hedge knight and then what Shadrick tells us about his own time as a hired knight or a hedge knight. As they resume their journey, the hired knight dropped back and looked her up and down. By the way, she's where you first see Shadrick, just for context, is with Brienne when she's looking for a young maid of 3 and 10. Is that how you say it? 10 and 3. What, yeah, whatever. 13 with auburn hair, and she's trying to find Sansa. So this is where she comes across him. So, yeah, he says, yeah, as they resumed their journey, the hired knight dropped back and looked her up and down as if she were a side of good salt pork. "You're a strapping, healthy wench, I'd say." Sir Jaime's mockery had cut her deep, and the little man's words hardly touched her. "A giant compared to some," he laughed. I'm big enough where it counts, wench. And he goes on to say, lie, he's probably not that big. So that's the first little nod to him not telling the truth. Sir Shadrick of the Shady Glen, some call me the Mad Mouse. He turned his shield to show her his sigil, a large white mouse with fierce red eyes on bendy brown blue. The brown is for the lands I've roamed. The blue is for the rivers I've crossed. The mouse is me. And again, this user believes that's a lie. The mouse is not him. It represents the ghost of High Heart. So here's where we get into some of these. When I read these and I think we need more context or more setup to that. But okay. Mm-hmm. So what? This is the piece of resistance to my theory. You know, this is where we might start resisting to it as well. But more in point two below. Brienne says, are you mad? Oh, quite. Your common mouse will run from blood and battle. The mad mouse seeks them out. It would seem he seldom finds them. I find enough, 'tis true. I am no tourney knight. I save my valor for the battlefield, woman. So, calls that a lie. Spoilers here, sort of a Winds of Winter chapter. Sir Shadrick laughed. Oh, I doubt that, but it may be that you and I share a quest. A little lost sister, is it? With blue eyes and auburn hair, he laughed again. You are not the only hunter in the woods. I seek for Sansa Stark as well. Now, wait, that's not Winds. Hold on. Let me click over here. That's actually not Winds of Winter. So let me see if I skip the Winds of Winter thing. Oh, okay. This has some of the Winds of Winter stuff. So there's passages supporting some of this stuff in Winds of Winter. Anyway, Brienne kept her face a mask to hide her dismay. Who is this Sansa Stark and why do you seek her? For love. Why else? She furrowed her brow. Love? Aye, love of gold. Unlike your good Sir Creighton, I did fight upon the Blackwater, but on the losing side. My ransom ruined me. You know who Varys is, I trust. The eunuch has offered a plump bag of gold for this girl you've never heard of. I am not a greedy man. If some oversized wench would help me find this naughty child, I would split the spider's coin with her. So that is, I believe, from A Feast for Crows, I think. I could be wrong. Maybe it's a Storm of Swords. Either way, though, that's still in the main series. And he's got later on some ties to Winds of Winter, so ignore that part. But lie, he seeks her to prevent the end of the world. More on that in point three. In addition to this, he thinks he's lying about the Blackwater and his ransom. Or I think he's lying about the Blackwater and his ransom. To be on the losing side of the Blackwater, he would have either had to be in Stannis' fleet, an unlikely choice for a mounted knight, or on the other shore of the Blackwater with Stannis's cavalry, which was composed of knights he brought from Dragonstone, which would mean Stannis brought him with him when he left King's Landing. Unlikely. The knights he took from Renly's army. So you remember when Renly is defeated and people come over to Stannis and right. He's got his group from Storm's End. Yeah. This would imply that Shadrick was in the Peaceful Reach looking for work when the War of the Five Kings had been raging in the Riverlands for at least 6 months. At this point, possibly more. I can't find a good timeline. This doesn't make any sense. We learned from Dunk that a hedge knight goes where the action is. So he's kind of saying the action was in the Riverlands. And so it's further north. How does he make it down in time to get with Stannis and his host when there's no action? That the first action that you really see is you see the stalemate between Renly and Stannis, but then now we're going to move against King's Landing. Like, how do the hedge knights know to go sign up down there? He's not telling you his moves ahead of time, I guess, is what we're implying here. Regarding his ransom, Dunk was a giant and was able to stay more or less employed, due in no small part to his size. He was also quite thrifty. Even so, when we meet him at the start of the Mystery Night, he doesn't have 2 silver's worth of coin. Ransoming back Thunder and his arms and armor at the tourney isn't even an option for him. How could a 5-foot-tall hedge knight have enough gold on him to ransom back his armor, his arms and armor, and his horse, which, by the way, I think is probably worth more than Thunder? I don't know horses, but yeah, a rangy courser sounds like a good horse, whereas Everyone who sees Thunder talks about how old and worn out he is, although we know he's still a good trooper. One more thing about this is his shield. Every damn time Dunk gets in a fight, his shield gets destroyed. How's come Shadrick's is intact? And as far as we know, from Brienne's point of view, undamaged enough to clearly make out the sigil. Quote, I thought you were in this merchant's hire, only so far as Duskendale. Highball is as niggardly as he is fearful. He is very fearful. What say you, wench? Really? Because when they get to Duskendale, that cheapskate merchant buys Shadrick dinner and a room at the inn. Based on our travels with Dunk, that's a freaking jackpot. And actually, that's interesting. So he has been in the employment of this merchant for a while, who does seem to be taking pretty good care of him and helping him move around. So why would you give that gig up? And also, gosh, if the merchant can pay like that, why Shadrick, and why not someone else? Yeah. You know, maybe he's more crafty than we know. So why is he traveling with Highball at all? Most likely for a cover story. Also, some cash doesn't hurt. Yet another thing we've learned from Dunk is that a random knight traveling on his own is usually assumed to be a criminal, and that's during peacetime. I'm going to skip those. These are passages from, Winds of Winter, and you got to click on them and open them up, and they're long. So we're skipping those, but there's more evidence basically to kind of back this up when you have the big tourney in the Vale. Point number two, all about albinos. So it's been driving me crazy trying to figure out the symbolism of Shadrick's albino mouse. And that's interesting. It's an albino mouse with red eyes, right? The three albinos we know in the story are so significant. Blood Raven, Ghost of High Heart, and Ghost. They all have ties to magic, in particular, weirwood magic, which is funky when you think about it, because weirwoods are kind of like albino trees with white skin and red eyes. Blood Raven is virtually a weirwood himself at this point. Ghost of High Heart haunts a hill ringed with 31 weirwood stumps. Ghost communicates with possibly future Bran through a weirwood in Jon's wolf dream in A Clash of Kings. So it's really hard to see how a short, insignificant sellsword might belong to this company. Then one day I was tinfoiling, no kidding, about his identity for the 100th time, thinking, which I think is a good thing. I say that in jest because I think I tinfoil all the time, and this is totally sounds very tinfoil. And I love it. That's why we read them. So anyways, I was tinfoiling about his identity for the 100th time, thinking he might be Hoster Tully's bastard son. And this is just one of his random thoughts he's had. Not that he has one, something I thought that he has had at some point. The brown is for the lands I've roamed. The blue is for the rivers that I've crossed. With an albino mouse in the middle of the lands and rivers, a tiny albino in the middle of the riverlands. The Ghost of High Heart is 3 feet tall. So what he's saying is that he thinks the shield is a clue that there's a lot of land with rivers running through it. And there's a tiny figure that's a mouse that's white with red eyes. And that is symbolic of him being an agent for the Ghost of High Heart. It's not really I had to read it a couple times actually to like understand what he was trying to say about this. But that's what I'm gathering, is that that sigil, a mouse is not roaming all over that countryside like that. I mean, this just seems kind of like he's a hedge. He's made this up. This is his shield. So this is him being connected somehow to the Ghost of High Heart. So what does this all mean? I think it's universally accepted that the Ghost of High Heart is Jenny of Oldstone's Wood Witch. Here's what we know about her. She has prophecies about the prince that was promised. She's extremely convincing. She convinced the heir to the throne, Jaehaerys II, to make his kids marry each other, believing that the prince that would be promised would be born from their line, and all that good stuff. She knows what happened at Summerhall. She accurately predicts several deaths. She had two visions of Sansa not dying. All right. So while I don't think it impacts my theory too much, I think Shadrick was most likely an unacknowledged bastard of a Riverlands noble who was set up with a job squiring to keep everyone happy. My current theory is that his father was Stevron Frey. Not important, but we can discuss in comments if you want. So yeah, he's bouncing around on ideas, because at one point he had, you know, him being real, one of the Tullys and so on. So that's all right. I think at some point in his travel, Shadrach camped on High Heart and got a visit from the ghost. As we've seen, she's pretty easy. She pretty easily can make people into believers. I think at some point she had another vision, another Sansa vision, and convinced him that he needs to find her and help her. This might also explain how he was able to go from searching for her on the road to Duskendale to finding her in the Vale. That would be a pretty huge coincidence. Maybe Ghost of High Heart had a vision pointing him in that direction. Whether he's there to help her escape or to protect her from someone, we can't know yet, but I firmly believe he's there to help. Hope you enjoyed reading. So too long, didn't read. Sir Shadrach is working as an agent of the Ghost of High Heart to help Sansa, possibly as a part of the prince or princess that was promised prophecy. I don't know how she fits into that prophecy necessarily. And I don't think that the ghost has, you know, much to say. I don't know. That seemed to be a Targaryen type of thing. But what do you think, Matt? Tinfoil?
I wouldn't dismiss the idea of somebody working as an agent for the Ghost of High Heart, but I don't think that they're necessarily bound to her or something. I think it's what's probably more likely is that, because remember the Ghost of High Heart wants to hear Jenny's song. Like she asks, you know, like Tom Seven Strings and those guys, like, I want to hear the song again. So what I think is probably most likely is that maybe if for this to give this just an idea of how I think it could work, is it's possible he came across her. He wants information about his future or something like that. He wants a prophecy about himself, and she could have him. I want you to do something for me. So like I wouldn't dismiss just to start the idea of somebody working for the Ghost of High Heart. I think that would be a scenario in which you could see something like that. Looking at the wiki and stuff here, because this is how it works. Some of these characters you kind of forget about, or you have to go back and look at and be like, what exactly is going on with this guy? Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's lying a lot, right? I mean, Brienne thinks he's lying. Mm-hmm. When he becomes sarcastic, you know, she knows, I think I could potentially see that.
Yeah. So, when she's traveling, she's with Sir Creighton,
mm-hmm. and Longbow.
Yeah. Sir Creighton Longbow. And he's totally lying. That guy's lying. He's making up story after story about things that happen. And so you have him. You have an honest hedge knight and one who's not so honest that she's traveling with. Then you come across Sir Shadrach, who seems more reputable and someone who is kind of he's traveling with a merchant. It's Brienne who buys him some food at first, right. But it is the merchant who will put him up for the night and give him a bed. So he's got a good gig there. And I don't know. We don't know much about him. I think he's interesting. I think the most interesting thing is the idea that you have a white mouse with those red eyes, and you're trying to figure out what's up with that. Then he does show back up in a Winds of Winter chapter with Sansa. You know, he's riding into this tourney. Now, hold on a second. He said he's not a tourney knight, but he is showing up to a tourney, right?
Right.
So that's another piece of evidence where you could say he's not necessarily telling the truth. He hasn't shown up in any tourneys as far as what he tells Brienne, but then he wants to go be a part of the what are they called, the winged knight, raven, whatever, falcon, right. The falcon brotherhood,
brotherhood of winged knights.
There you go, the brotherhood of winged knights, which there's gonna be 8 of those versus 7, because you know Sweet Robin needs to be a bit better than the Kingsguard, and he needs 8 instead of 7. And there's a big tourney to kind of, you know, figure out who those individuals are. So maybe that's different. Maybe that's part of the reason. And he wants to kind of prove himself there. So, what do you got?
Well, here we go. On the Song of Ice and Fire, you were reading from the Reddit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this is from the Forum of Ice and Fire, which is also tied to the wiki. It's also really good. Here, somebody is breaking it down, talking about all of the people who he could possibly be working for, and he lists pros and cons.
Really?
It's really good. Yes, really good.
Let's go.
So he says, for those who don't remember who he is, he's a sellsword that first meets Brienne, et cetera, et cetera. So he says, number one, Varys's agent. Pros: Shadrach says he hopes to get a reward from Varys. Varys's old spy network was known as Little Mice, and they were known to be small and quick. Also, Varys needs Sansa. He says, cons: Varys is gone, but Shadrach doesn't know that, right? At first, I thought Varys might need Sansa to marry him to Aegon, but now Aegon is likely to marry somebody else. So, Cersei, he says, pros: Shadrach needs a reward. Cons: Cersei cares more about capturing Tyrion, so I doubt he would get much reward from her anyway. And he probably would have said he's working for Cersei. So he says, secretly Manderly, secretly working for the Manderlys. He says, pros: white mouse / rat cook parallel. The river in Shadrach sigil could be the Mander. White mouse with red eyes could refer to the old gods and his knighthood to the Seven, similar to Sir Bartimus. It says Wyman is trying to get a Stark back. Why not another? He arrives to the Vale with Sir Morgoth, and Garth is a name from the Reach. It says Wyman is very secret about his missions. This could be another one. Cons: he's small, whereas the Manderly family are usually described as being big. So I wouldn't know that he's secretly himself a Manderly, but he could be in the employ of them. He lists Hal and Reed, but that one's just like, so I don't even think there's any validity to that one. He kind of goes on, wow, some weird tangents here, potentially giving the idea of Lyza, Aaron, and Littlefinger's son. I don't think there's any validity to that. Here we go. Stan, an agent of Stannis. He fought for Stannis at the Blackwater. Stannis inspires loyalty. He says, cons: they're too far from each other. So he says, just a sellsword. Sometimes a tree is just a tree. Right? And then he just kind of goes on and lists like literally possibility of everybody. But I would say some of those, and again, I think especially Varys is the one that is likely, if it is, because he does say he's trying to get a reward from Varys and the little mice connection.
Yeah, and another thing he does too, so it's in that Winds of Winter chapter. He's asked, like, you know, are you gonna get in the joust? Are you gonna do these different things? And the only thing better, he says, the only thing better than getting into like a melee where he's just in, you know, just hand-to-hand combat would be if he stumbled across a sack of dragons, you know, like money.
Right.
And so he seems to be a guy who wants to just have this, I don't know, he wants to be well paid and he wants to kind of, you know, earn some money. So someone's paying him. He does end up in the service of Peter Baelish. That's at the very end of A Feast for Crows when he shows up there. But before that, he's not. And I don't think, yeah, it's not like something where you find out that the Kettleblacks, you know, later on were employed by Peter Baelish. And that's like a double kind of, you know,
right
move or whatever. Like, yeah.
He meets Elaine Stone. He dances with her in the Winds of Winter. Could be the thing where we've been wondering how do you move, because to use the show as any sort of theoretical guide to move us forward, even without the show, you still have to get to sort of scenarios in which things happen. And our sort of one question is, Sansa, what do you do with Sansa? Because she's not with Ramsay Bolton like we saw in the show. Mm-hmm. And that sort of served as like a key. Okay, I can see how you move this piece here to get over to John, and then that rallies John, and we go fight Renly, and then that gets him out of the, or not Renly, but Ramsay, and that gets them out, and then you can go forward from there to move towards the end, which is going to be White Walkers and King's Landing. Well, right now the issue is Sansa. She's one of the biggest issues because she's, where does she go from here? Right now it just seems like she's going to stay in the Vale, and unless we hear of some battle that's going to take place in Winterfell with Jon Snow, then otherwise she's just going to stay in the Vale. And where are we going to go? Well, we saw Jane Poole escape as Arya, although in the show it's Sansa herself who does it. Maybe this guy figures out who she is, mm-hmm. and she escapes the veil.
Yeah, yeah. And then the question is,
you know,
is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? Like who is he? Like the question is who is he working for, and what are his intentions with Sansa? Is it just to help return her to who, for what purpose? You know, like.
Well, even if he's a bad guy and he figures that he ultimately discovers who she is, he might be able to get her to Varys, knowing that, I mean, Varys is gone right now, but get her to Varys knowing that Brienne was looking for. So, I mean, he obviously knows that the Stark children is something where that could pay a high reward.
Yeah, it's worth it. So that's what
if he gets her. Yeah, if he figures out who she is, gets her to Varys. And then we see the big Varys realizes this is the real deal. Let's marry her to young Griff. And now we've got a formidable.
Yeah. That'd be sick.
And then maybe you get some descent later between Sansa and who's married to young Griff trying to claim the throne. And then by that point you've got Daenerys over here and she's with John, and they get together, and then it's like John, Daenerys, or Sansa, young Griff. I mean, who know? You never know.
We have no flipping clue because George is not finishing the daggone book.
We have no clue because we need another book.
That is crazy to think about that. Like maybe she does end up with young Griff in some way, and that Shadrick is a part of it. Because like I said, whether he's good or bad, if it's a Ghost of Highheart, it's to preserve her and her line and her story for some important reason. If it's somebody who just wants to give this guy money and they're trying to use Sansa politically, either way, it moves her around and gets her out of the veil. And it also could be that he's someone who is caught by Littlefinger. Littlefinger might further kind of dig in, I guess, or kind of I'm trying to think of a good way to put this, but like it might allow him to keep, because Sansa is thinking in the veil it was Baelish who protected me, who got me out, who saved me from my aunt and all these different things. Like she's starting to kind of fall into this, like he's looking out for me type of thing. Now she's getting wise to it as he's losing a little bit of power in the Vale. And she's starting to understand politics in the Vale, but this could be another guy who, if he stops Shadrick, then, you know, might keep her closer to Baelish. And we're still wondering how does she move on from him? So Yeah. Anyway.
Interesting.
The Mad Mouse. There's not much to go on. So we have a chapter where there wasn't much, and we also have a character where there isn't much to go on. And, you know, you do what you can. All right. So.
Yes, you do. Yes, 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 you do. So. Okay, guys. All right. Well, that is it for us this week. Just remember, Thursday is Bannerman Hangout for you guys who are that tier and above on Patreon. So look forward to talking to you guys then. It's going to be 7 p.m. Eastern time, 7:30, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be on a little bit early. So, but yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 58, Davos 3 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.